So, good evening. Tonight is our 12th chapter of our book, Letting Go, and the name of this chapter is Happiness is Extending Key. That title could be misunderstood, might be misleading, might sort of make you think, well, I guess I have to learn to extend key so I can be happy. Because we look at happiness as something we want to achieve or attain. And we all, each of you has your own strategy that you're currently working on to increase your happiness. Everyone has a varying degrees of self-perceived happiness. Some of you used to be happier before you think than you are now, and hoping you will get happier again. And some of you used to be more unhappy and are happier now, but it's never enough, so you want to be even more happy. So if happiness is this extending key, then woohoo, all I have to do is learn to extend key, and I'll be happy. Right? Of course. You are all extending key right now. Therefore, you know what's going on. You can see what's going on. You can hear me. You can see me. You're aware of your thoughts, you're aware of how you feel, how your body feels inside right now, you're aware of that. Extend key just means being in awareness, being in attention. Doesn't mean we have to do something extra. It just means we have to wake up to what's going on already right now. And that waking up is just looking. It's not something you have to wait for years and years and years to achieve. Just notice what's already happening, because this is it. Nothing changes. This is it. Somebody said, told me, you know, what you're doing up there in a question and answer group or a discussion group like this is like walking on a tight, balancing on a tightrope. Very apt. So if that's the case, then what are you doing? Well, some of you are sitting back, watching me, balancing here, up here on this tightrope, not knowing what's going to come next. Any attempt to control what's going to happen, I fall off the tightrope. So staying on the tightrope means not allowed to attempt to alter anything in any way, which means cannot have any preference. Any idea about anything will knock me off the tightrope. So some of you are watching. Some of you are pretending like you're... pretending is a misleading word there, but... let's say acting like you're also on the tightrope and you're commenting about what that's really like. You know, sometimes some people just make comments or try to encourage me. But what you're really doing when you do that is you're grabbing the rope and going, ha, see if it'll knock me off. And some of you even come over and try to push me off sometimes. But most of you don't do any of that. Most of you just sit back and watch. So I'm asking you tonight and always to jump up here on the tightrope with me. Expose yourself. Put yourself in a place where there is no turning back. What's the worst that can happen? Fall off, jump on again. But there's no easing onto it, you know? You got to jump. So I say you are all extending ki already, because that is our natural condition. But as Toi Sensei said, you know, there's calmness, and then there's calmness in action. True calmness is calmness in action. Calmness when you're on the tightrope. So this is a heightened sense of being human. This is living your life truly, completely, without hesitation. No beliefs about extending ki or not extending ki. Just get on the rope and see what this is like. Many people ask me questions. It sounds like they're not sure. Get on the rope. You'll know immediately. So what if you fall off right away? Jump back on. And most people want to sit back and watch me up there doing my dance. I mean, ask yourself, is that the kind of person you want to be? Is that the kind of life you want to have? The one who is always watching from a distance and commenting internally on it? No, I don't think any of you would say yes to that. All right, I'm going to read something from the chapter. And this begins on page 142. Excuse me. Chapter 12, Happiness is Extending Ki. Just about everything that we do in Aikido was developed by Koichi Tohei Sensei to reveal something about ourselves. We cannot let go if we don't see what there is to let go of. If we don't see a limitation, we cannot move beyond that limitation. We can't dissolve a barrier that slows us down or impedes our progress, keeping us from being genuinely authentic, unless it is revealed to us. So when we practice, what is actually being revealed? Most of us approach Aikido in exactly the way that we approach our daily life problems. We are products of self-imposed patterns, of unrevealed storylines that we tend to blindly follow without awareness. In everything you do, you are there. So if you can see some of your patterns of behavior in some aspect of your Aikido training, then that will not only spread throughout all of your practices in Aikido, but also into your daily life. A limitation revealed and resolved is a limitation that is resolved in all aspects of your life. We must not act unilaterally in this business. The universe has a rhythm. Or if you like, you can say that it has a will. What we call the universe, you can, if you want, give it a further personality and call it God. There can be any number of names for this. We just say universe, and that is fine. We don't have to endow this with our own concepts of self. Still, no matter what we call this, it is this very thing right here. It is this, and it has a rhythm. When we act in concert with that rhythm, then we seem to have a very powerful will, because we are not out of balance with what is. We are moving with what we might call the will of the universe, in exact harmony with what is happening. When we move from our own personal notions, following our own will, then most often we are off time or out of tune with this universe. This universe includes and therefore cares for everyone, not just us. We can be a champion, someone held in high esteem by others, while at the same time quite miserable to ourselves inside, if we are not in harmony with the universe. We say the ultimate goal of this training is to be one with the universe. This means to move in harmony with this rhythm. This is being one with the universe. So your will and the will of the universe are not separate. When we find ourselves in this harmonious condition, it produces a feeling within us, which we can call happiness. I'm going to page 147. Happiness is not an object in itself. We are talking about a state of being. A state of being does not mean something that I am in, Because in that phrase, there is a subject, and that makes happiness an object. State of being simply means the condition of how things are. This is our natural condition, as long as we are not thinking that we know it is that, and reflecting on that. Because if we do that, then we are treating this state of being as an object, and we will try to cling to it. I want you to be happy. How to be happy is not to try to change the circumstances inside or outside of yourself. In other words, we don't attempt to evade, cling to, or alter in any way our experience. Of course, yes, we pursue our activities like working, developing relationships, maybe voting to change the political structure, that's a big one. It's not as if we don't do anything. We have to drive to work, we're involved in the community. All of these things we do. It is simply that we don't make the mistake of thinking that having these things one way or another produces happiness. Otherwise, happiness is an object in itself that we long for and will never, ever have. We will always be discontent. It will never be enough. I am suggesting that happiness is our fundamental condition, which exists already before we see something wrong with the world and attempt to correct it to make ourselves happy. Page 152, second paragraph. So, that is why I wanted to start out by asking what you folks think is the source of true happiness. Happiness is extending key means true happiness is a state of mind that we call or identify as key extending. We have people very upset in this world who want to kill other people, blow up countries, fly planes into buildings and things, because their contention is that happiness comes from objects, and they don't have them, and it's pissing them off. Or, happiness comes from a certain set of religious practices, and if you don't believe that, then I will kill you. This is a big mistake, and a true human tragedy. And maybe the biggest mistake of all is that we either represent ourselves to others as happy as a result of our objects, or we offer to others that we can be happy by having fewer objects, implying that they should be happy with less. Two sides of the same unbalanced coin. If you misrepresent happiness in that way, you are causing someone else to be envious of you. Don't be surprised if they are maybe a little angry at you as a result. So I hope that what I read about happiness there helps to explain what I was trying to get at in the beginning. You know, what I was talking about balancing on the tightrope. There's no, of course, tightrope. The balancing is between past and future. It is staying right in the present, which is a moving condition. One moment moves to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, and any effort to influence ourselves, anything that we're experiencing, in any way, including everything you can think of, moves us away off the rope, what I called falling off the rope, which is falling into the future or into the past. So really we're balancing, this tightrope is balancing in a state of constant motion, as balance is, balancing here in this moment. Of course there's a lot of pressures that arise in our lives that tend to tempt us to move away from the moment to the future or to the past, like thinking happiness is something you have to attain later, or remembering some happiness you had in the past. So it can be very distracting, and that's what makes it difficult to balance here in the moment. So even though it is our natural condition, we don't often stay in that awareness of that condition because we're tempted to stray. We're taken away by our reaction to whatever it is that's going on, our attempt to cling to and manipulate or resist and push away takes us away from experiencing everything that is here without preference. Now we can have some questions.
Well, I just want to ask, all the feelings and emotions that you explain and talk about, I've undoubtedly experienced. And I don't think I've ever even talked to anybody about them, and you just know that I have these feelings. And I just wonder what it's all about. I don't even know what I'm trying to ask, but what's it all about? Why do we fall off the rope, I guess? Where does it come from?
That's a good question. When you have a thought, for instance, where does it come from?
I don't know.
We don't know. No one knows. And after it goes, where does it go? We don't know. No one knows. And when it takes place, where does it take place?
Right here.
And that is?
I don't know.
Don't know. So what do we say about something that we don't know where it came from, we don't know where it is, and we don't know where it goes?
That it doesn't exist?
Yeah, that it doesn't exist.
So why do we want to know what it is?
Well, why do we follow that thought? Why are we such suckers for that thought or that emotion? Or that next thing that comes up, whatever it is. It's all the same. Every experience is just like a thought. That's just an example. Every feeling we have, every sensation we experience, every thought we have, is all the same. We don't know where it comes from. We don't know where the experience of it takes place. And we don't know where it goes. And yet, it's tremendously compelling. And it's good that it's compelling. It raises, when something is compelling, it raises our level of energy. Uh-huh. And when we bring our sense of exploration and curiosity to why is that so attractive to that, that brings, that's like bringing a flint and a piece of steel together. And that's what makes stuff happen. That's what makes living life really worthwhile. When we bring our curiosity, when we bring our awareness to this question. There may be no answer to that question that's satisfactory. We can offer answers, and we always do. But any word or phrase or paragraph or book that is offering those answers is not the thing itself. It's just pointing to it. So no matter how clever or how useful even our answer, it's not the thing itself. It's not the experience. And being on that tightrope, like I said, it requires always inquiring into it, always bringing your awareness into it. That's inquiry. It's not asking a question so much as just in being in a state of inquiry, bringing your awareness to this strange paradox, something that apparently doesn't even exist, is tremendously compelling. So that's our practice. The four, in chapter five, I gave you the four aspects of practice. Number one, show up. Number two, open to whatever is happening. Number three, follow along with it, no matter where it takes you. And number four, accept whatever the result is. And all four of those are without preference. Without preference. Without attempting to make it any other way than it is. You don't come to the dojo for that. You don't start a conversation for that. You don't meet anything that comes your way that way. Just follow those four principles. And that will keep you always on the tightrope wire of the present. Completely awake, inquiring, full awareness, and no time to be running off anywhere. Because you're too busy paying attention. So I know I don't answer your question per se, but does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. More practice is always a good idea. More practice.
I'm wondering, so when we're living in the moment and something does come up, let's say someone says something to you that you don't like, and trying not to react and respond to that. I mean, I just have a hard time with that. Like, someone says something to you, I know, just let it go. You just don't engage them at all. Is that, what you're saying when you're talking about not reacting when...
If... When you have a reaction, once you notice it, it's already there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any warning. It's up and running before you know it. And then you notice, and you try to suppress it because you think you should. Like I'm telling you, you should do something. Well, I'm not telling you should do something. Whatever comes up, that's you, and that's right now. So experience it completely. I always say, don't express it, don't repress it, just address it. Address it means be in inquiry, be in awareness, be in the moment. Don't judge yourself. Remember I said without preference. That means it's not wrong or right. Whatever happens is what happens. It's not a matter of it should be some other way, or it should be one way or another way. There's no such thing. Those are just ideas. That's pretty much why we have the reaction to begin with, because somebody says something that you think they shouldn't say, and it upsets you, so something comes up. So experience that. Just be here with it. That way you stay... Something may be said, something may be not be said. It's okay, either one. No, there's no rules. When I say don't express it, I mean don't feel compelled to put your upsetness out there on someone else. Like it's their fault that you're upset. You're upset. So, don't add insult to injury, is what we say. We all know that phrase, it's a cliche. And how many follow it? Practice more. Of course, it begins in the dojo here and in your relationships with your fellow students. They're tweaking you all the time, right? Yeah, lots of laughter. Yeah, well, of course, that's what the Sangha is for. That's what the group is for. That's why every one of you is so important. That's why someone who really tweaks you is a really important part of your life. You need to cherish that person. Be very grateful for that person. There was a person in the dojo one time years ago that I didn't very much like because she got on my nerves. And I actually went to Suzuki Sensei and said, you got to get rid of this person. She's causing trouble in the dojo. And he said, what? She's the most valuable student we have. I'm like, of course, thinking, I'm the most valuable student you have. What are you talking about? That's how arrogant that is, that position is. I was exposed right there. I willingly exposed myself, ignorantly. But then it was out, and then I could see, now I have to deal with this. Okay? Is it helpful?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
I like this. I can just point at people.
So, Sensei, what if the present moment is not as much fun as a past memory that you'd rather dwell in for a few minutes because it brings more pleasure? I mean, we all have a capacity to remember the past, every one of us, so that's got to be something that's, I don't know, why is it there, you know, if it's not something or worth it.
Have you ever heard the phrase cheap thrills?
Hi, Sensei.
As we practice, we develop a keener and keener, more refined sense of what you call fun. Of course, in all of our pasts, we have been fairly crude, all of us, at one time or another, and thought it was great fun. You know, when you're a 14-year-old boy, everything you do is disgusting. But to you, to adults, but to you, it's the most fun. You know, like mooning a freight train. I mean, a passenger train. You know, like, that's the fun thing to do? Well, 14-year-old boys think that is great fun. Right? Any of you ever did that? See, you don't want anyone to know, but, so, you see what I mean? So, often, and almost 100% of the time, I have to say, when we're looking back at something that was fun, that's another person.
Yeah, what is that? Like, that's...
It's cheap thrills.
It's
avoidance of what is happening right now. When you don't think this is... Like, let's say you're sitting in meditation, and you're bored. Bored is an emotion. A very interesting one. Experience that boredom completely. Who is bored? Where did it come from? Where does the experience take place? And when it's over, where does it go? As soon as you turn the light of awareness on that, boredom ceases instantly. But instead, you take it for granted that you're right to be bored and flee off to some past place to find some cheap thrills, to entertain yourself until the clock says you can get up and do something else.
Yeah,
am I right?
Until the next good thing comes and now I'm present again.
Or until you surprisingly become enlightened, which you vainly dream might happen by just hanging out. No. Bringing yourself back to the present and being in this, what I've been calling inquiry, or being in awareness, being in the present, completely engaging, whatever it is, boredom, fine, engage boredom, whatever it is, this is the tightrope. And there's no vacations, there's no getting off, because it's always now.
I sense that, yeah, thank
okay?
you.
Give it to him.
I think this has been asked before, but if being present and being on the tightrope is our natural condition, why is it so hard, and why do we always have thoughts, and just why is it so interesting to just run off and think about things or think about the future and the past? And for me, it's really challenging just to be present. Why is it so hard?
Yes, that question gets asked at every single question and answer session, almost without fail. So why don't you tell me, because you're the one that's experiencing that, why is it so attractive?
For me, I think my attention is very short when I try and just be in the moment that I'm in. And it's almost a reflex to just go off somewhere else.
You're sort of asking the same question that David asked. Again, cheap thrills. In other words, you're not respecting yourself, which always, you exist here and now. You're not respecting this moment, this life that you're living. Because, of course, if you're off thinking about something else, you're not actually experiencing your life. That's not your life. This is your life. This is where it happens, right here and now. So if you're off in some imagined state, some in la-la land, in the past, or dreaming about some future event, you're missing everything. You're missing life completely. And for most people, that's most of their life. Unless they have some life-threatening experience. And then when that happens, everyone that's ever had that experience reports, I was really living in that moment. Because it forced them, it forces your attention to the present when it's life-threatening. You can't escape it. It's something compellingly. And therefore, people become addicted to that way of having this experience, and so climb mountains, climb Mount Everest, rock climbing, risk their lives, drive fast race cars, you know? Everybody has their own way of thrill-seeking, and that is a way, when you risk your life, of forcing your attention to the present, and so you get to experience life much more fully than when you're daydreaming about something, right? So, you really have a choice there. Most of the choices we make are just conditioned reactions to have a beer or have a soda. That's just some sort of program that you have. I happen to like this, or I happen to like this. Some selecting one thing over another, or even choosing a mate. That's all conditioned response to however you've developed over the years. But you have one true choice that you can make in every single moment, and that is to be present or not, to be in awareness or not. And that choice you have to make consciously to stay here. You can leave unconsciously, but the choice to keep one point, the choice to stay present, the choice to inquire into this life, to stay on this tightrope of a moment, this is the choice of a lifetime. Then this is the choice that you practice over and over and over again and get better and better at making. So you can see it when you suddenly are somewhere else. Oh, meant to be here. Okay, back. You don't go, well, okay, I'll go back there in a minute. This is really interesting. No. You know it leads nowhere. It's a perfumed harlot that offers you nothing in return. Emptiness, nothing. Raw sawdust. There's nothing there. It's all imagined. It's like masturbation. It's not the real thing. So you don't choose the false. You choose the real. Choose the real means keep one point. Come back to this moment. No matter what is in the moment, it's always the only place to be, because that's the only place your life is. The only place your life has any true meaning. Of course, that's why we practice key breathing, practice key meditation, or practice any form of meditation, is to build our capacity of attention so that we can be here. We have the strength to make that decision to stay present instead of going up somewhere. Okay?
Sensei, as you were talking, I had a recollection of something that could be seen as painful and uncomfortable and unhappy. I was hiking in the crater, and I was going down sliding sands, and I aggravated an old knee injury. So I was in a lot of pain. My friends took off, basically, and did the whole hike. I did the whole hike by myself, from sliding sands out of the crater. But the pain sharpened my attention. I remember almost every step of the way, and it's one of the most memorable hikes I've had.
Congratulations.
It was an extraordinary experience. A couple of very strange things happened. But, I was climbing out in the switchbacks, and I had a sensation of climbing a spire. I literally had to stop in the trail and orient myself. I had no choice but to hike, but I did have a choice. So what was occurring to me when you're talking is about choice. Is it a choice to be happy, or is it a choice to extend ki? And you've already answered it. You have one choice, is to be present.
Right. Thank you for that summary. Give it to Joelle.
I was debating in my mind about key extending first and then comes happiness, or the other way. And
you mean whether key extending causes happiness or happiness causes key extending?
Yes.
Is that a cause and effect deal there?
Well, my experience is that when I'm happy, and I'm not planning to, but when I experience it, I also experience that my key is extended.
And what do you mean by key is extended? Joelle.
I'm in the present.
Joelle.
Yes.
Happiness is extending key.
Yeah, but...
There aren't two things. Happiness and extending key are the same thing. In the sense that you're talking about now. So one couldn't cause the other. They're one thing. I think it's because I use the word happiness that it might tend to make you think of it that way, as a separate, as like you could have extending key without happiness, or you could have happiness without extending key. But in this way I'm using it, it's impossible. Maybe it might be better to say joy than happiness, because happiness often is a sort of a giddy thing. Happiness is sometimes cheap thrills. The deep sense of fulfillment we feel when we're in the present, the tremendous engagement in the life force that we experience, produces a sense of great joy. Although it might not be giddy happiness, it might not be something like that. So maybe I could have entitled the chapter, Joy is Extending Key, or Extending Key is Joy, to help people see that there's not two there. It is this, there's just this state of being, which we could call joy, or we could call key is extending, or we could call one point, or we could call inquiring into the present moment, or we could call, which sounds a little intellectual, and it's not something you do intellectually, this inquiry. It's you're looking from the one point, not from your thought structure. And this is just a way of expressing what you're trying to say. When you find yourself in that condition, you're also in the other condition, you notice. Right? So this is confirmation that happiness is extending key.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Did you have a further question about this?
Well, I will put it another way, which is, if something makes me unhappy.
Unhappy,
yeah. If I have a sorrow or something that I'm not happy about, then my key shrinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel that too. And I don't have control over that.
You don't have control over the thing that happens.
Right.
But, and then you see that you react to that, which is called suffering,
right,
or feeling sad, as you said. You see that reaction come, and in a sense, you don't have control over that either. It just happens. You just react. It's a pattern that's in you. But you can choose to wallow in that pain and suffering, or you can choose to try to push it away and repress it, intellectually tell yourself something that, oh, it's just, that just doesn't matter, or a sensei says that I should do this or I should do that kind of idea. And you can wail and pull your hair and tell everyone you know about this horrible problem, or keep it to yourself and repress it and let it build up until it's really causing you a lot of pain. Or you can just inquire into it. Or, in other words, you can keep one point. And once you keep one point and inquire into it and experience it for what it is, maybe you won't feel, quote unquote, happiness, but you have a sense of fullness, which even in the worst tragedy, we can call joy. We can call this joy, this experience. You know, I heard a story about a friend of mine running a funeral, running a... No, not a mortician. It was the priest that was doing the funeral ceremony, and a young man had died, and they were interning him, and he is quite an adept, and he helped everyone come to the present. And later on, the boy's mother, the mother of the deceased, came up to him at the party afterward or the food gathering, and said, The strangest thing happened to me while you were speaking at my son's funeral. I felt a deep sense of joy. And I almost criticized myself for that because I love my son so much. And I felt that the society wants me to feel suffering. She said, it's not that I felt happy that he was dead, but I felt so in the moment that I felt this great sense of joy. So even in a moment of a great tragedy, if you're present with it, this can be very satisfactory,
enriching.
Very fulfilling and enriching. Thank you. Very enriching. To Sally.
All this talk has made me jump off the wire to an experience where you were talking about life and death situations. And when I was in that experience, I can remember consciously choosing to die in this moment, but in my way. And it was a very calm thing. I wouldn't call it joy, but it was extremely calm. Is that what you're talking about?
Can you help me understand what you're saying? You chose to...
My life was
Your life was threatened.
And not only my life, but people around me. And for some reason, I just became extremely calm. I've always wondered about this. I mean, I was just totally calm. And I chose, I will die here and now, but not in some cane field. I will die here, if that's going to be.
Oh.
And I just, my heart is beating now because that was afterwards. But during the time, I was never calmer in my whole life. I wouldn't call it joy, but I was aware, conscious.
Yeah.
And calm. I don't think I was dead calm. Maybe. I don't know.
they left. Why? I don't know. Squealed their tires and left me and the group. But it was a conscious decision to die there on my terms, and it was very calm. It was kind of, I haven't understood it, because all these years I haven't understood that experience. Was that joy?
Until now. Of course.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really need to say anything about that.
Okay.
Do I?
So it's just cheap thrills to go back and feel, try to feel that calmness?
You saw what was necessary to see. You knew what the choice was.
Right.
And you made it.
Yeah.
And once we make that choice, we are in a state of deep calmness, a deep knowing. There's no disturbance. Things may be chaotic around us. That's why people in war often say, I experience this tremendous calmness and peace in the midst of battle. This happens often, you know, that people report that. And I was talking about driving fast race cars or climbing a mountain or putting your... When something happens and you find yourself in this situation, and when you can cause it to happen, like taking drugs or climbing a mountain or putting yourself in some danger, then it becomes an addiction. When you aren't the cause of it. In other words, when you don't see something has happened that you didn't bring about in your own way of seeing, then you won't become addicted to it, but you will never forget it all your life. And you will always wonder, how was that able to happen in that moment? But now you know. And I know that in other times in your life, you have experienced this. In other situations, not actually similar to that, from an external perspective, but if you looked at it internally, when there is some attempt to take you away, to cause you to disrespect yourself, as I was talking about to you, and you make the choice, no, I'll die on my own terms. Thank you. Immediately you become deeply calm and enter a deep state of knowing. That's it right there. That's practice. This is pristine awareness. And we can all practice it every day, all day long. That's what we're born for. This is the purpose of being a human being. Okay, thank you very much.